Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of your friendly local game pod. My name is Jenna.
Hi, this is Rachel.
And we have a guest today. She is a board game store owner down in Texas of Geek Life. Her name is Angel. Angel, if you would introduce yourself a little bit for us, that would be great.
So I'm Angel Smith, and as I mentioned, I own Geek Life down in Houston, Texas. We are located in kind of the central part of Houston, an area called The Heights, and we are the only game store in this part of Houston. Houston's pretty spread out. You might hear about sprawl, urban sprawl, and Houston's kind of the definition of urban sprawl. Inside what we refer to as the inner loop, there are three, maybe four game stores. And inside of Houston proper, we're the only woman-owned, woman-run game store. And we are unapologetically inclusive. So we actively encourage underrepresented populations to engage with us. And we try to feature games and comics created by or featuring underrepresented demographics.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, very cool. I was reading a little bit about that on your Facebook page. It was in your mission. You know, like, I really like that, unapologetically inclusive. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about kind of what starting that store that had that mission was like. So, you know, what was the response from the community? You know, really what did you get out of it kind of that first year or so when you started?
We had a great response the first year. And we continue to have a good response. When people discover us, because y'all are in game stores, y'all understand that, you know, you constantly get people in, they're like, oh, how long have you been here? A few years now. And we're so glad to hear you found us. So we're just so glad to hear you now.
Yes.
It's wild how you know, they might live like two blocks from you and they've never heard of you and something finally clicked, and it's hard kind of teasing that out. What, you know, how, what, because we need to do that more.
Do you think that's like a symptom of our digital age where people are just not paying attention to the environment around them, or what?
I think that's part of it, because we are on a pretty major thoroughfare, constantly have people driving past, and I have had people say, oh yeah, I've been driving past you, and I'm like, well, our sign was kind of smallish and it's bigger now, but it's the answer. I think part of it is, yeah, because if you're, I mean, hopefully they're being good drivers and their eyes are on the road and that's why they haven't noticed us, and it just happens to be when they are a passenger. Yes. They actually noticed.
Yes. Yes.
But we do have had great response. So like I said, there's three or four game stores inside the loop, and the other one that has a significant amount of game space is a highly competitive store. And it's also been around for like 15 or so years. I can't remember off the top of my head. So they're well established, mm-hmm. but they're also highly competitive. So when we opened, we just leaned into a casual atmosphere and casual play. And that's the kind of environment that we wanted to create anyway, because the competitive atmosphere, you get a lot of the gatekeeping and a lot of the, well, you know, how long have you been playing, and that kind of stuff, where we get that less in a casual atmosphere. And just by the nature of our price support and other active measures that we take, the highly competitive players aren't drawn to us. We do have some excellent top tier players that play with us when they just want to throw down some cards or just want to get some games in, and they don't want to, but when they want to play a competitive, you know, highbrow game, then they'll go to our peer. And so I think, like, it's a balance, and we're filling two different niches, and we have players that are regulars at both stores, and I think it's a good fit. But I think there was a need for the kind of, I don't want to be on all the time, and mm-hmm. I want to just go in and have some, sling some cardboard with my friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. And I think there's definitely a place for both types of stores in the same area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think what's nice about, you know, having that more casual atmosphere is that it makes it, it lends itself to inclusivity, where it's very hard to approach a very competitive store, even as a gamer. Like, and I feel like, you know, I've played a lot of games, but it's, I don't always want to go. Like, we walked into a couple stores when we were traveling this last year, and there was a couple stores that you walk in and you're like, oh, this is a very competitive store. And like, you just, like, from the minute you step in, you know, like, the people, because mm-hmm. the people there that don't know you look at you and size you up immediately. And it's like, I just want to go browse your board game stack. Like, back off. Like, I'm not here to dethrone you. Go away.
I'm not a threat.
Yes, exactly. Like, I just need to, like, look unassuming as I walk in. And then that makes, yeah, I don't know. It's goofy. But
I love it when they walk up to Jacques and start talking to him, my husband. And then I'm like, well, actually, I'm the dungeon master. Can I see what you have?
Yeah. Oh, it's goofy.
So does Jacques run the store, or is he involved in the store much?
So for the Gathering Games, we actually have four different owners. So it's myself and three other guys, and we're a very small percentage owner, Jacques and I. We only own 10%. So we both help out at the store. Jacques has a lot of great IT skills. So he helps with, we have like a running PowerPoint going on in the store. So he helps with that. And he's actually really, really good with customers, like casual customers coming in the store. So he usually, awesome. Yeah. So basically he just tags along with me. But I have a lot of I have a lot more retail experience, so I tend to take the reins a bit. So how about you? Is your family involved at all?
Yeah, so I have a husband, and he has a day job in IT. But he does occasionally cover shifts, because we do have two kids and they're young and they need constant attention. We can't just leave them at home yet. So depending on what's going on, if I need to be home, then he'll cover a shift, but he doesn't work in the store on a regular basis. And so I'll get calls routinely. What's the price for it? What format are we running tonight?
Yeah.
Where is this product? But he's a great support, and I think it does bring him a little chuckle in myself when, you know, he has to be like, hold on, I have to call my wife and find out what the details are.
Yeah.
He doesn't know, you know, just by virtue of being in the industry as long as I have, I just have this institutional knowledge and know these particular aspects that he hasn't had a need to learn.
Right. Right. So how long, tell us a little bit about how long you have been involved in the industry.
So we started the business with a booth at local game and comic conventions. And we did that for 5 or 6 years. For about 5 years before we opened the brick and mortar. And then we opened the brick and mortar in 2015. So this is our 5th year anniversary.
Ooh, hey, congratulations.
We shifted to celebrating in the summer because there are more people around and more of a reason to party. And we'll probably shift it back to the fall this year for obvious reasons.
Yes.
Or we'll do a virtual one. We got time to decide.
Yes.
So in the industry, working game conventions and comic conventions for about 10 years, and just by virtue of being around, you just learn things and pick up things along the way. And I don't know everything, but I know a lot more than I did 10 years ago.
I mean, obviously things have changed pretty significantly in the last months. You know, I know the Gathering Games has gone through some significant changes. How have you guys, you know, what has changed for you? You know, how are you guys holding up?
So there was a lot of chatter. So I'm in several retailer forums online, which I think is how we all met. And there was a lot of chatter starting in probably mid-February, like about what we need to be thinking about, what we need to be doing. A friend of mine, who's not in the industry at all, has a husband that travels to work, and I don't remember if he was in China or Australia, but he came back and, or he was on his way back, and he advised her to go get her, we're on the Gulf Coast, and he told her to, why don't you go ahead and get our hurricane supplies early this year, because we usually, if you live in the Gulf Coast, you buy your hurricane supplies around April, May. And so he said, and she mentioned that, and I thought, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that too, because if China's affected, then supply chain is affected, and what else could that possibly affect? That's as far out as I was thinking at that point, that it might be a supply chain thing, and mm-hmm. and we just need to be prepared for that. And from a business standpoint, I was kind of evaluating, okay, what do we need to have on hand if there's, because we do just-in-time ordering. And I think a lot of the small stores do just-in-time ordering because we can't afford to sit on thousands and thousands of dollars of inventory.
Yeah.
Just hoping it's going to sell. So kind of reevaluating the just-in-time model and tweaking it a little to have just a little more on stock on hand than we would normally. So we can't sit on a lot. We can't bring in a lot. We don't have like rows and rows of the same game. We have a few copies of the same game. And then at the end of February, I was doing, so the first game convention I ever worked, the business ever did a booth at, is a little game convention at Rice University called OwlCon, because they're the Rice Owls, and their student organization puts on OwlCon every year.
That's really cool.
And it's like a 600-person event. It's amazing, and all of the dealers, there's like, they limit it to like, I think a dozen or so dealers, and we're all in what's called the Grand Hall, which is this beautiful old meeting room. It's a Grand Hall. And it's a great little community, and we've been doing it for so long, and so we were there, and for the first time in my, I think I've been doing it 8 years, the first time ever, I actually participated in a LARP. And I've wanted to do the evening LARP a whole time I've been attending. I've always had to be working the booth or had a newborn or one thing or another. So I got to play. I'm leaving at like 1:32 in the morning, checking my phone as I walk to my car, and there's a news item that several members of Rice University were in self-quarantine out of an abundance of caution. And here we are hosting this 600-person convention on the same campus where they have a dozen or so people self-quarantined.
Oh my goodness.
And I think it ended up, like, two people were confirmed, and there were a lot of probably jokes and bad taste about the super con crud.
The
next day was Sunday, the last day of the con, and I think we were all even more hypervigilant about, we weren't shaking hands, and we were using lots of hand sanitizer, and it was becoming a thing. And so I started evaluating what we needed to do at the store. And I bought extra, and again, our cleaning supplies, also buy just in time. And the toilet paper was starting to become scarcer. So I stocked up, like, I can't have a game space if I don't have a bathroom. Right. And I can't have a bathroom if I don't have toilet paper. So we bought extra cleaning supplies. We didn't hoard toilet paper, but like an extra case, you know, an extra 24 or 36 pack of toilet paper. Mm-hmm. And then I think, so that brings us into early March, weekend of March 13th. And I remember, cause it was Friday the 13th, we were doing a mystery draft that had been mystery Magic the Gathering, mystery booster draft. I think that was our last big event because I had rearranged the entire store so that there was at least 3 feet between players. So I took out over half of our seating and I moved the chairs so that there was 3 feet between players, and our tables are 3 feet wide. So they had to be, it was going to force them to be spread out. Because that was the best guidance at the time. It wasn't this, don't be in close proximity without a mask. It was stay 3 to 6 feet apart. Now it's 10 to 15. So at the time it was the best guidance, and I was trying to facilitate that and then still do something. And we fired a pod of, I want to say 9 players. It might've been 10. And they moved the chairs. And I was just, oh, you guys, I'm trying my best here.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, I wasn't mad at them. Right. I did have a staff person working, and I wasn't going to call her because I do check the cameras when I'm not at the store. And I wasn't going to call her and be like, hey, make them move those chairs apart. I was just like, okay, well, that's a data point that I'm going to take and incorporate moving forward. And they did the same thing at our Saturday afternoon commander. And we had a player who was coughing the whole time and saying it was allergies. And you know what? It probably was allergies, but you're scaring everybody. And we don't know. Like, make sure. I believe you. And I that he has no reason to lie, and he knows his body. Our Sunday groups both voluntarily decided on their own. We have a Pokemon group and we have a Gundam group because we adopted some video gamers that bring all their gear in and play in our background on Sunday. Their home store moved to the other side of town, and they're like, hey, we play on Sundays, and we're paying the previous store this venue fee. Would that be okay? I'm like, you know what? Let's do it. That's I was smart. Like, I don't have any computers. I'm not going to buy computers. And they're like, oh, no, we'll bring everything in. I was like, sure. They're so chill. They're one of the best groups we have coming in. But they decided amongst themselves that they weren't going to come in. And the, like I said, our Heights Pokemon group decided that they were going to call it off. Kind of that was when I was like, okay, my data points are saying, even if I facilitate separation, the players aren't going to necessarily adhere to that. So we need to do, I just, at that point I realized I had to cancel events. There was no guidance from any, government authority that we had to do that. I just, I can't claim to be a community leader and not look after the most vulnerable among us. And I take my role as a community leader. I'm a small, tiny micro business, and I realize that. But there are people that look to me as a community leader, and I wanted to take care of my community, but I also wanted to lead by example and kind of telegraph to people, this is important, and it's not something to joke around with. I have a friend that is an MD PhD from Vanderbilt, and I texted with him about the same time, around the time that I canceled events. I'm going to censor myself, but his response was, yeah, this S is very, very real.
Yeah.
And so that kind of drove it home for me. I was like, done. Okay. I'm not questioning half of our business model is events. And I just slit that throat, and like, it sucks. And
yes,
it's hard, but it's the right thing to do. And I'm not going to regret. As this was getting more serious, I had some conversations with friends, and I was like, you know, if the store doesn't see the other side of this, I'm going to be bummed, but I'm not going to be despondent about it.
Yeah.
Because nothing I did caused this.
Right.
I didn't make a bad order. I didn't hours or had payroll too high or, you know, any of the other numerous things that cause businesses like ours to go under. Not to say I haven't made bad decisions, because I have, and I've learned from them, but a global pandemic is not anything I have any control over. And if we don't make it through, we don't make it through. I'm not looking at the near term. I'm looking at the long term. So right now people are talking about, we won't be able to gather in groups of any significance until like 2021. And okay, so that means that we don't have events till 2021. And right now, sorry, I skipped ahead. I'll get back to the long term. But we canceled events, and then St. Patrick's Day is coming up, and I'm really nervous about all these bars. hosting all these parties and all these people, and it just, our mayor and our county judge, which has a lot of say in our local government, so they, we're in Harris County, and the kind of head of Harris County is the county judge, and so the county judge and the Houston mayor both made similar orders in tandem that the base, I think it was precluded events under like 200 people, or maybe it was under 50 people, over 50 people. Yeah, I think it was over 50 people. So like all the bars couldn't have their big St. Patrick's Day blowout, the parades were canceled. I think the other big thing in Texas that made people sit up and start paying attention was when they canceled South by Southwest. It's a huge thing. And then more directly in Houston, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo is a yearly event that's huge in our town. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge international rodeo and world-renowned in those circles. It's like the Gen Con of the rodeo industry.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
or maybe it's more like the Essen of the rodeo industry. It's huge and it's international and everyone in the industry goes there. But the they go to the show and to compete, but like the attendance-wise is like 70% local. And it had been up and running and they stopped it mid-tracks. I think it was about the same time it was right around St. Patrick's Day. So it was right before the St. Patrick's Day order. They didn't officially say it was a St. Patrick's Day order, but I know that they were all thinking, we gotta stop these St. Patrick's Day parties. So that came down and we moved to curbside only. And then, so that was around like I said, the 18th or so. Is when we did curbside. We did curbside for like a week, and then we had a stay-at-home order. They didn't want to call it shelter-in-place because, again, Gulf Coast, we have hurricanes, and shelter-in-place, we have a particular mindset of what that means. That means you stay in your house, because if you don't, you're going to get flooded. You know, you're going to get your car washed out. You can get blown away. Whatever. It's bad. You cannot leave your house. So this was a stay-at-home order, which just made it – they encouraged you – not to leave unless you had to get groceries or essential items, medicine, if you were essential worker. So we did curbside until the stay-at-home order came down. And then we shifted to pre-orders. And so on our website, you can pre-order for pickup. And it says specifically, you can pick it up when we resume curbside. Because I predict that we'll be allowed to do curbside, that we will do curbside again before opening fully. And our governor yesterday did announce that retail to go would be allowed starting next Friday.
Okay.
And I'm not sure yet how we're going to engage with that. So it's to be determined on our end. But looking long term, getting back to that, I don't see us hosting events for a year. And if we do, it'll have to be small. It's none of these, you know, 30 plus person pre-releases, which is a huge quarterly surge in our.
Yes.
And we were just spinning up a very successful drop-in D&D program. We had independent contracted DMs. So we were paying DMs to run drop-in games, charging a fee and paying, using it. Part of it to pay the DM, and then part of it was a revenue stream. And people loved it because they didn't have to find a DM. They didn't have to have a schedule that allowed them to meet once a week or routinely at all. It was literally drop in. Other than adhering to our general code of conduct, the only requirement I had for the DM for these games is you have to let players come and go as their schedule allows. So you might see a player once and never again. They might come every other week. They might come sporadically. You just have to accommodate that. And it was popular with both players. The DMs obviously loved it because they're getting a little bit of extra spending money. I mean, I wasn't paying like $20 an hour, but it was something. And as opposed to not getting paid anything, everyone was happy with it. I had just hired like 4 more DMs.
Oh, geez.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
We hired staff. We hired store staff finally. It had just been the owners working. And we finally hired store staff. And then the layoff happened. So
Yeah, it wasn't even, 2 weeks? Like, right. It was literally like, you guys hired them, had them, and then now everything shut down. It's like,
right.
Yeah.
But we will, you know, in Wisconsin, we're starting drive-up service here soon, too, next week. So we'll be able to have them working again.
So will you have them come in and, like, pull orders, or are they doing, are y'all doing that personal shopping type stuff?
Well, so we're in a very small town, so we have a main street, so people can just pull right up in front of the store, and then we're going to do contactless, you know, put it in your trunk, put it on the sidewalk, but, you know, it's such a small town that we don't have any traffic issues right now or anything, so...
Not that we have traffic issues on a given day.
That's
well, I mean, I guess kind of.
yeah. But then one of our owners is available to make deliveries in the evenings in the immediate surrounding area. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But most of our sales.
How has that worked out? That's an idea.
Oh, sorry. Most of our sales are secondary magic cards. Through TCG Player online.
Okay. Have you seen a shift in an amount and volume?
Yes. At the beginning, it was much lower, and then we assume there was a stimulus check bump because last week sales skyrocketed.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's doing what it's supposed to. So how can people support your store right now? Are you doing online sales or?
We're not doing online sales. Despite having worked logistics in a previous life, I didn't open an online store. I am intimidated. I've done eBay, not for the store, but like personally a few times and lost money on shipping. And it's just kind of like, we did kind of dip our toes in eBay for the store because we had some, when we started, we were also selling vintage games and toys. And we still have a lot of that stuff that we just need to like get rid of because it's not our focus anymore.
Right.
And so I guess a couple years ago, we dipped our toes into eBaying this stuff that's just in our back stock and we need to offload it. And so, you know, it has a price. It's not like I need to, you know, fire sale it for a dollar or anything. It's not like it's, I can't think of a flop game, but it's not like it's a game that's just like, take it or I'm putting it in the recycling. Because it's stuff that people are looking for, not our people. So we dipped our toes into eBay. There was an unfortunate incident with someone who was really mad about how long it was taking. Even with my, you know, owning, like we thought we'd mailed it, and then we realized like there had been miscommunication, and it was labeled and it was ready to go, but it hadn't actually made it to the post office. When I discovered that issue, you know, I told the guy, this is the issue and I'm sorry and how can I make it up to you? And he got very nasty and we had to get eBay involved. This is not worth it for the $5 or $10 that I'm making after fees and shipping and everything. So we're not doing online sales. We're doing online sales for curbside pickup. And I'm toying with the idea of delivery, and I'm probably the only, but because Houston is a very large town, it would be limited in area and geography, but I'm probably also going to limit it to announcing it on our community pages, because it's one thing to deliver something that one of our regulars bought, because I feel like I know them enough that I'm not going to feel weird driving up to their doorstep, but like, even if I limit it geographically, there's so many people in this small geographic, even if I stay within 3 miles of the store, even if I limit it to just 3 miles, like there's so many, we're sprawled, but we're pretty dense. And I am a woman and I don't need to be on that danger.
Yeah.
Right.
So I know that there's other stores doing it. A woman up in Portland she owns a comic book store and she's doing it and has had a lot of success, but I think it's her community that she's delivering to. So we are considering delivery, but that's the last resort.
Yeah.
But as far as supporting us, like if anyone wants to buy it, we do have e-gift cards that you can buy. You can use it now or later. I think the biggest way, like, for anyone who's not in the Houston area that happens to be watching this, support your local store.
Yes.
I wrote a thing on Facebook and I made it public. I'll share it with you guys. But the gist of it is, I don't think a lot of people understand. I think the majority of Americans, when you say small business, they think of stores like us. They think of their cafe or their local trainer at the gym or their tattoo parlor or their hair salon or that cute coffee shop. All these small stores like us.
Yeah.
And by like us, I mean in size and scope. Mm-hmm. What most people don't understand is that small business trademarked by the SBA is up to $700 million in revenue.
Oh my goodness.
It's obscene.
Yeah.
And up to 500 employees. So we are, I guess, officially micro businesses. Mm-hmm. And we're at the bottom of the barrel receiving any of this help. You know, whether it's the PPP, the Payment Protection Program, or the EIDL, because they have to make all these things a cutesy little acronym. It's the EIDL, emergency, I don't remember, whatever. But they're calling it EIDL because, you know, we're idle, we're sitting there.
That's infuriating.
right?
Cool.
But the EIDL and the PPP, we're at the bottom of the list to get that money. Like, you know, an infusion of even $10,000 would be mm-hmm. huge for a store like us. And
huge.
That is nothing. That is nothing compared to what these other entities are asking for. And I won't get into large chains that are receive multiple tens of millions of dollars. But I also get it because they also employ more people. And so if you get those larger entities, the PPP money, then they can keep those people off of unemployment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I get that. And even before all of this, you know, banks want to loan large sums. So much so that when we were opening the brick and mortar, the SBA didn't want to talk to us because I wasn't asking for enough money. I had to go with an entity called Lift Fund. If you're thinking of opening a store, talk to them. They're amazing. They're easy to work with. I get no kickback from this. I mean, it wasn't a breeze, but if that's your only option,
yeah,
that's your only option. But the SBA was like, you're not asking for enough money. It's not worth it. It wasn't worth it to them, to the bank, to do the SBA loan paperwork for this pittance. And I know that's why we're at the bottom of the list. Like the amount that calculated my PPP would be is laughable. It's laughable.
Yeah.
But it would also sustain us.
Right.
So anyway, so that soapbox is to say, most Americans think of us when they think of small business. The government does not think of us when they think of small business. And if you want to see small businesses on the other side of this, like your favorite cafe, whatever it is, even if it's not gathering games.
The gathering games,
even if it's not, like, whoever it is, support whatever you can do. If you're able, I know a lot of people are able to work remote. And if you're able, you know, if your income hasn't changed and you're relatively stable, please buy a gift card. Do curbside pickup at any of these little cafes or restaurants because I also trust that the small cafes and restaurants are taking sanitation very seriously because it is the only way.
Yes.
If they have any cases, they're done. I know there's a local restaurant who has a member of their family is one of our regulars. And they are concerned about, well, if someone is symptomatic or tests positive and they've been in that restaurant, like an employee, then they have to down for like a week because it can stay on surfaces for, you know, different surfaces for different lengths of time. And they have to be 1,000% sure there's no chance. And so I think that a lot of small cafes and restaurants are going to be taking it that seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's probably safer to go with a local, you know, cafe or coffee shop, or what have you, because they're going to take it so much more seriously because it is a matter of their business existing.
Yeah.
So what you can do to support me is support my industry.
Yes.
Wherever you are.
Yeah. And I mean, theoretically, the board game industry is a great industry to support right now because there are people with kids at home that, you know, are looking for things to do. And you know, screen time is screen time and it's necessary sometimes. And I'm not arguing that, but, you know, there are definitely other avenues to explore. I mean, we got along for hundreds of years without screens. So, right? Yeah. So it's a good, well,
and,
I agree.
And
it's
a games good thing. Are a great educational tool.
Yes.
Agreed.
And not just puzzles.
I'm the teacher.
They're a great educational tool that math.
Yeah.
See, we have it from an expert.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. I am like, we do not get a kickback for this, but I am one of the biggest like genius games fan in the world. Mm-hmm. Like I am in a, yeah, it's fine. I love them.
They're great.
Yeah. They're yes. wonderful.
Yes. We carry Genius Games because of Jenna. she okay. introduced us to all their games. So.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I love them. Love them.
I'm sorry. Is that junk orbit?
Yes.
Rachel, is that
yes.
junk orbit? I thought so. Sorry. I just noticed it just now.
No, that's okay. So Angel's referring to, I'm in front of my home game shelf right now, and we've got junk orbit up on the top.
Yeah, you just pointed it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Video of the store, and then before we shut down, and I recognize it in video form because I was just looking at that video last night.
Oh, funny. Nice and distinctive.
I mean, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be sure to put Angel's store in our notes for the podcast, but just right now, so people know where to find you, where can we find you online?
Okay, so online, it's our website is www.shopgeeklife.com, all one word. And then we're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, sort of trying to ramp that up. And the handle for all those is at Shop Geek Life. When we started our branding, Geek Life itself was taken by a blog, I believe. But we're the only Shop Geek Life. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Awesome.
Very cool. Yeah,
if you're in the Houston area, definitely check out Geek Life.
Yes. In whatever form you can.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And do you have a favorite game that you're playing right now?
You know, there's that adage that once you own a game store, you don't play games.
Right.
It's true.
Yes.
I do. My husband and I are partial to a game called Tavern Master. I don't know how much traction it's gotten nationally or international. But it's actually by a local, well, Southeast Texas local designer. And if you're in a tavern, it, you know, all the D&D games start in a tavern, right? So you're right. In a tavern, but you're trying to run the best, but you're running the tavern. So there's different cards you have to play. It's a resource management game. And it's okay. A lot of fun. And the family... we're a big fan of Sushi Go because even the 5-year-old can play it because he's yeah. just like, oh, we're putting down cards. Yeah. doesn't always play. It's amazing. The first past the post is a lot more family friendly than elimination games because they did not like Dungeon Mayhem. There were a lot of tears over that game.
Yeah. So what can you recommend from your store right now when you are able to do curbside pickup?
Well, it's a junk orbit we had yes. just brought in. It's a nice kind of tactile game. And it's also a good kind of like a sciencey resource management-y type game. Mm-hmm.
It's a brain burner.
We also have Trekking the National Parks, which is a huge hugely award-winning game. And I think it's going to be particularly appealing because you get to sort of virtually, analogly, explore national parks while staying at home.
Yes.
Yes, that is a great one for right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
Well, Angel, we appreciate you so much coming on today. Jenna, did you have any last questions?
No, I think I am good.
Okay. And anything else you want to promote? Thank you so much. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for coming. This was a ton of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
It has been. It's been a great fun. It's been great talking to other people about the industry. You don't get to do that much right now. But yeah, stay in touch with your local communities. Support your local businesses, your honest to goodness small businesses that are not going to receive any of the federal bailout money. But we're scrappy. We'll figure it out.
Yes.
And reach out to me if anyone's watching this. Reach out to me if you are a small business and you don't know about other options. There aren't a lot. I haven't gotten any, but there are some that might pertain to certain areas more than others. And I'm happy to chat with any ideas because I want the industry to continue. And because we used to be a hybrid store when we first opened, hybrid games and comics, and we have comics are not my wheelhouse, and I learned that in the first couple of years. And so we've kind of shifted away from being as heavily comic driven as we were when we opened. Mm-hmm. But I'm still involved in a lot of the comic groups, and it's rough. It's rough for the comic stores.
I bet. So
hopefully we can avoid their fate.
Yes. Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, this has been the Friendly Local Game Pod. It's been Rachel and Jenna and Angel Smith from Geek Life in Houston, Texas. Talk to you guys later.